Blog Talk Radio.
All they want is a home, and you know it. You push them, and they push right back. Me and my crew are rolling out of here. Let's go. They're not going to touch us.
All right, Star 1 aboard. Negative Decepticon activity.
TRS, stand fast.
Drop your guns.
You sure you don't want to shoot? I'm a big old target. Wusses.
Whose side are you on? They're all bad.
No, they're not.
Oh. Well, they are. They are all bad. But I'm just talking about the entire franchise as a whole. Welcome, everybody, to Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics, and that clip you just heard was from Transformers The Last Night. It is also the last film in the franchise directed by Michael Bay, or so he says. It's also the last one to star Mark Wahlberg. They both came out last weekend and said they were done. Mark, what's new for Mark Wahlberg? I mean, this is only his second movie, and he's already bowing out. But Bay has been saying he's done with Transformers since the second movie. He's been saying it forever, and he always comes back. In fact, Mark Wahlberg says he doesn't believe that Michael Bay is done. And honestly, I'm not so sure I really believe him either. I think he might take a break, and then he'll shoot something in between, and then he'll do Transformers 6, and he'll keep doing those movies until he dies, or they finally stop making money, which may actually be this weekend, because it's off to the weakest start any Transformers movie has had. So who knows? We'll see how these things pan out, but look, it's going to make worldwide bare minimum $600 million. Even if it somewhat disappoints here, it'll do gangbusters overseas. Anyway, we'll talk more about that later. My buddy Julian Lytel is coming on to talk about the movie with me. And look, I put it in the title of the episode, so there'll be no faking. We're probably going to crap all over this movie. Why lie? I mean, that's probably what we're going to do. You can write off my attitude that I think this movie sucks. So there you go. Other than that, man, this has been kind of an insane week for, like, movie news. And in terms of, like, studio, like, big franchise movie news. Of course, you got the Han Solo situation with Phil Lord and Chris Miller leaving that movie. We got a whole bunch of stuff with Sony and Spider-Man that came out. It's just insane, man. Just insane. All the stuff that's been going on this week alone. I mean, you got news on X-Men Dark Phoenix and Godzilla 2 and a new Triple X movie. And then you got, like, this little thing about Daniel Day-Lewis, which is like, oh, okay. And Jurassic World, sequel to that, has a title now. There's so much stuff going on here, man. It's just insane. We only got an hour. But I'm going to end the hour with my thoughts on Ron Howard taking over the Han Solo movie. So that's how I'm going to close out the show. So you want to stick around for that. But for now, let's bring in my boy Julian to talk about Transformers The Last Night. What up, Julian?
What's up? We're going to talk about this Transformers. That's what I'm calling it, Transformers.
That's funny. It's so simple, but it's funny anyway. yeah, man. I guess that is what we're going to talk about. I feel like I've talked about it a lot this week since it came out early. But I don't know anybody that watched Transformers The Last Night and came out of it saying, you know what, they really pulled something out of the hat right there. They really did something thought provoking and entertaining with that movie. That was a good show by Michael Bay. I don't know anybody that came out of it thinking that way. Did you have you found anybody that came out of it liking that movie?
I saw people that maybe gave it like okays. I'm like, nah, this ain't okay. Like the last one was okay to me. Like this one is straight trash. This is like the worst joint ever. Like not just Transformers.
Yeah.
Like what the 21st century, 17 years old. This is the worst joint of the 21st century. Like
period. Really
there's nothing
bad.
Wacker than this movie.
It's like, insanely bad. You and I.
These movies.
You and I sat next to each other watching this, so we both were kind of like, what the hell's going on in this movie the entire time? And you and I are pretty smart. We both know our stuff, especially when it comes to Transformers. And we're just like, what the hell's going on here? Like, what? They were doing stuff, like, even the little stuff was wrong. Like Hot Rod being French. Like, what was that? What was that?
You know, I don't even – I waited 5 minutes to get Hot Rod in this. And this is what you give me. He just talks in a French accent because it's cool. I'm like, this is. I don't even know why the. I don't even know why the World War One tank was in the movie. I don't even know,
why
he's so old.
Either.
Like why
right.
is he falling
Does
upon
he
why he's so old? You show me, like Bumblebee. They show him in World War Two, so that means
Bumblebee was around then too. Why didn't he age?
Like, why does he not fall? Like, I don't understand. Like, I don't understand this movie into the context of the other previous four movies. Like, it falls apart under its own Transformers movie verse continuity rules. Like, I'm not even going off of the, like, yo, back in 1984 in episode 10. And like, nah,
right.
I don't even care about that.
Right.
I've seen enough Transformers.
You and I have gotten over the fact, I think, that this is not the Transformers you and I grew up with. We're past that point now. I complained about that, like the first movie. I complained about it, you know, because I had waited forever for a live action Transformers movie, and then it wasn't the Transformers I grew up with. I complained then. I'm well beyond that now. This doesn't make any sense at all. Like you said, in the framework of these movies, it makes no sense. Why were there baby Transformers? What was that?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't even know, like, where did the Triceratops come from? Like, all of a sudden he was there, but he didn't show him before. Like, are you telling me that the baby, Triceratops becomes the bigger one? So is the baby T-Rex Grimlock when he doesn't want to be big and eating cars? Like, why is Grimlock a dog? Like, why does he act like a dog? Like, there's one thing for him to act like basically a robot Incredible Hulk and talk in third person.
Right.
And then he's just a dog. Like, that's it. Like, he's a big dog.
Yeah.
He does nothing. He rolls around and smashes cars, like, on his back. I'm like, this is it. Like, he's Beethoven.
To be fair, the cartoon Grimlock acted that way when he was in dino form sometimes. He would act really kind of silly like that, you know. But
yeah, he would act silly, but, like, he's not a dog.
But
he talks. He has some logic.
and here's my thing. All right, so those who don't know anything about this movie, basically – it sets up that the Transformers have been around on Earth for forever. The movie actually begins with them in the time of King Arthur. They're actually part of the Knights of the Round Table, basically. And then it sets up that Transformers have been around for decades or centuries even fighting in World War II. I don't have a problem with that necessarily. It seems silly and ridiculous. I don't have an issue with
Transformers 1.
No,
Transformers 1 just got there.
No. Look, that's what I was going to say. I don't have a problem with the concept of it. I don't have that problem. But I do have a problem in terms of how much it makes sense. Because, like you said, Transformers 1 establishes that they only just got there. But also, I feel like the point of this movie, which is like, why do the Transformers keep showing up on Earth? It's like that question gets answered like every movie. It's like every movie is about them trying to find some sort of object on Earth that's here. And it's like that question has always been answered. I didn't need that question answered again in some more definitive way in this movie. It didn't seem necessary. So I'm like, what was the point?
I don't understand why the climax of the movie is the same climax to 3. Like, 3 was like... It was bringing Cybertron to Earth so it can be rebuilt with the energies of Earth. Like, you've been there, you've done that. You destroy Sentinel Prime. is over. But suddenly the planet is back because they said the planet was destroyed when it imploded. So how did it get back? Like, who? Like, how did? Why was there anything left? Like, I don't understand. And I don't understand why they were
prime flying
like an island of green. Like, and you do that to the Quintessons, you just make it a little small robot woman. Like, you have.
Yeah.
That's my nerdy nitpick. I'm like, the Quintessons was dope. They had five faces. They like super duper douchebag. And
they had Sharktacons.
That's what you do.
They had Sharktacons hanging out with them.
Like, that's what you do. And Bumblebee, for some reason, acts like a junkie on in this movie. Like, he can get blown up and pull himself back together, but then other robots can't. Like, I don't understand.
I was going to ask you about that. Where did that power come from? I don't remember that.
When it happened in the movie, that's the biggest problem. Like, the Junkions was the only one that was able to do that. But you got all these other movies with people getting their arms ripped off and they're bleeding and they fall apart like, I'm still going, and then they die. But you have a movie where this happens to the Bumblebee, he literally just pulls himself back together.
Right.
And
he
could talk. Why hasn't he been talking?
He just started. They made a whole big thing about him not talking in the beginning. They gave him a voice box so that he could talk. He pulls it out, gets rid of it because he sounds like a girl, and then he just starts talking later. He just started talking. So was he always able to talk? I mean, if that, then what the hell is that crap in the beginning then? I don't
know, because it didn't make sense because they fixed this voice box in the suit. That was a big thing. Like, you fix your voice and I can talk again. Like, you did this already. Like, you legitimately did this already. It's not that old. Like, I don't get it. Like, the movies are on TV all the time. It's on TNT probably right now. You can watch Revenge of the Fallen or Dark of the Moon or Age of Extinction all right now, currently. I'm not even trying to look for it. Just like, TNT's got it on. FX has it on. Somebody got it on. Like,
right. This is crazy. I mean, complain about bad movies, and I'll be upfront with saying that I have not liked really any of these movies that much. I think I may have given a couple of them 3s out of 5 to say they were like barely above average to me. But for the most part, I have not really cared for many of these movies. But this one was something on a whole different level. This was a measure of incompetence that was out of this world. And it even got to the point where, I mean, Michael Bay's visuals don't even impress. I mean, they just don't anymore.
He's bored.
He's
bored. I can see it. Like, he wanted to shoot the soldiers more. Like, every time the soldiers come on, we got to see them suit up and run around and get the plane ready or get the helicopter ready, and they shot all beautifully. Like, you just want to make another 13 hours. Like, why don't you go make G.I. Joe then? Like,
Why they did some of those scenes with like in Camelot and in World War II, because he wanted to make those kinds of movies and he couldn't. Like, he didn't have time. But he wanted to throw those scenes out there so I could do so you can have a Braveheart moment with like the horses charging the field. And then, you know, and I feel like that's what he wanted to do more than the actual Transformers stuff. Because the Transformers stuff, he's like you said, is really boring. It's not shot creatively at all by him. There's just nothing to it.
He's done so much better. You see this, it's like, you really don't care. And then it's in the movie, I'm like, when the movie first started, I'm like, why is Stanley Tucci in this if they're not going to connect to him in the last movie? Like, he made Transformers in the last movie. He made soulless Transformers, and that's how Megatron came back to life. He wasn't really Megatron. He didn't have a spark. But suddenly, you got Stanley Tucci as Merlin, but he's not part of the Wiccans. And then Megatron looks completely different, and he's actually talking like he used to. Like none of that stuff ever happened. Like, he didn't die or nothing. Like, dude, you died and came back with like no soul. That was a thing.
Yeah.
So much
I feel
to
like
do there. Like, he was essentially
Mortal like
Master.
Every.
I was like, I want Mortal
Master. I feel like every version of Megatron that they've used in this movie and all these movies has been bad. Like, I've not liked what they've done with Megatron at all in terms of setting him up as Optimus Prime's nemesis. They have not done a very good job of it in any of the movies, but even more so in this one. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, because Optimus Prime in these movies is unbeatable. Like, he's like super dude. Like, he's like super. He's even more like he's the hero of Transformers. But like, at least, like in the old 1985 movie, yo, like Megatron whooped his ass. He died. It was a wrap. Like,
right. Yep.
That was a thing. Like, Megatron turns into a gun. He is the most dangerous Transformer ever. And he just gets beaten up. And the only thing I like about the last two movies with Megatron is that they finally got Frank Welker to do the voice, so you finally get Peter Cullen and Frank Welker going back and forth like they used to do. Because my man from Agent Smith and Lord of the Rings, he did okay. He has a great voice.
Hugo Weaving,
He's not Megatron. Like, he's...
No.
Agent Smith, he's not like gravelly Starscream, I'll crush your head in my hand if you betray me again, Soundwave, get Astro Train to go take us out of here type of depth of like, and like, okay, they got the voice is on point, but, and why was the Decepticons the Suicide Squad? Why do they have all those little cute names pop up on the screen?
Why explain this to me, because I made a comment about this in my review because it made absolutely no sense at all besides the Suicide Squad thing. Why in the world would Megatron negotiate with humans to break out Decepticons? Does that seem like anything he would ever do?
Why would the humans lock them up? Because from the previous movies, all Transformers weren't really banned at the end of 4. It was like, yo, the Decepticons gotta go. Like, if you show me the army from the first 3 movies with Josh Duhamel, I can't say his name correctly.
Yeah.
Why are the Decepticons locked up? And why can he negotiate like he's a freaking drug dealer to get like, oh, I'll do this for you. You get my people out. I'm like, yo, they're freaking destroyed. They destroy cities. Why are you locking them up? How are you locking up? Then why did you kill all the previous ones?
I feel like they made that scene just for the joke of having it look like a drug dealer scene.
Yeah, because
I feel like that's the only reason why they made it, because it makes no sense at all that you got these government reps sitting there negotiating with Megatron like he's El Chapo, and it's like, what is this going on here?
They had jewelry on, Travis. Julio, why did Barricade have like a rope gold chain on and he walking back and forth? I'm like, hey, I thought you died in 2. How did you come back to life? And then why do all the other Decepticons look like copies of the ones from the first 3 movies? Well, like, if you brought Barricade back, just bring back all the other ones that you magically killed.
Yeah.
Why are you working with the Decepticons? Like, why don't you just work with the Autobots? Like, who is this Transformers force that killed Transformers? Didn't we learn that's a bad thing to do because of freaking Frasier in the last movie with his CIA Transformers?
They act like there haven't been 4 movies of Decepticons trying to destroy the Earth.
Or take the Earth over to, like, rebuild. Right. Like, that's the only thing they got right. The Decepticons come to Earth to steal the resources to rebuild Cybertron. Like, that's the only thing they got right from the original show. Like, but they keep doing the same things. I don't even know why Josh Duhamel is back in this. Like, he serves no purpose. There was no Tyrese to go back.
Tyrese
and
was supposed
to
be in
Brandon
it. He was
dude.
There on set. Makes you wonder if his scenes got cut. But he was there. He was there on set. I don't know why he wasn't in the movie. That kind of surprised me.
I would have gave it an extra half a star if I could have had some old school Josh Duhamel, Tyrese back and forth. Real G.I. Joe talk versus what we got with the one guy who always wanted to kill Transformers. Like, Transformers are bad.
Yeah.
Like, hold up.
The one dimensional.
They saved
the
Chicago.
One dimensional.
You're not
Transformers off that guy. Yeah.
Yeah, like, they saved Chicago. They saved China. Why do you want to kill the Autobots again?
Right.
Explain this to me.
Right. Why does he want to kill the Autobots, but he doesn't want to kill the Decepticons?
Yeah, the ones who try to destroy the world every time they come back.
Right. It doesn't make any sense. Right. Nothing about the movie makes sense. And, you know, and then a lot of this was made about, you know, Optimus Prime, you know, turning evil in the movie, quote unquote. He's not in the movie that much. He's gone for about 80% of it. He's not there.
He was only bad for 5 minutes. He
was bad for like
Bumblebee for 5 minutes. And then magically Marky Mark gets the freaking Excalibur sword, and then he doesn't use it the rest of the movie.
Right.
You have a magic sword. At least the other King Arthur movie got it right. You limit break and you destroy everything.
But he had a big gun. He had a big gun that he was able to
and
use.
How did he get a Transformer killing gun? I was so confused.
I just assumed he took it from one of the Transformers he saved or something, and he just kind of kept it. That's my assumption. I really don't know. At that time.
Why was the Latina girl in there? Like, what was her purpose?
She was there to set up.
She's
there to set up her role in the next movies, because you know she's going to be sticking around probably, because Wahlberg's gone. They need somebody to carry over, I guess.
And they just bring Shia LaBeouf back.
Did you see his quick little appearance in the movie?
Yeah, the picture from him from the freaking first movie.
It's kind of
funny. Like, you couldn't even like talk him. You couldn't pay him to like get like a new picture. Like maybe Sam is sitting there with the blonde girl. Maybe he got a kid now. We might get some Daniel in the next movie. We might actually get some allegories to Transformers the motion picture. Nah, y'all, they some lames. I know it makes me so mad. It's so bad.
Yeah, it's ridiculous how bad this Transformers movie is. Five movies in, they should be getting, if not better, they shouldn't be getting actively worse like this. Not to this degree. But it makes me wonder, I mean, because look, the franchise is going to verge into a different direction. It has to. If Wahlberg leaves and Bay leaves, and then they do this Bumblebee spinoff movie, which is the next one, I feel like that whole Bumblebee sequence is kind of a reminder that, hey, we're doing this Bumblebee movie.
Yeah, that's what it all was set up. Like, oh, him and Hot Rod was fighting World War II. Then why is Bumblebee acting like he doesn't know Hot Rod? Why isn't he like, oh, hey, man, hugging him or like giving him a dap? Like, they're standing around like they don't know each other, but they were fighting World War II.
Right.
And if they were fighting World War II and they had posters, like, why were Transformers a new thing when they popped up to get the AllSpark in the first movie? Like, everybody's sitting there like, oh, there used to be these big robots, but they disappeared.
Right. And the Bumblebee movie is supposed to take place in the 1980s, so it's a little bit more of a, I would call it a prequel, but since we know he was there before that, it's not really a prequel either. I don't know what it is. It's just a movie in the 80s, I guess.
They should just reboot the franchise with G.I. Joe and Mask. Like, they should just reboot it and make it like a consistent, everybody's in the universes, then just make this a consistent thing. Like,
they might as well, since we know that they've created this cinematic universe that has all those, you know, properties in it, Mask and Rom and G.I. Joe isn't officially part of it yet, but G.I. Joe would be in it, of course, because they're Paramount also. Paramount Hasbro. So, I mean, so they would be in it too, but they should probably just reboot it. I mean, it probably would make more sense to just do that rather than trying to continue on with a sixth movie.
Then you don't have to make up dumb humans. You got, like, perfectly good humans. You have freaking Duke, or you have Mac Tracker, or you have, like, Destro. Like, you get to have interesting human dynamics where they don't have to make, like, who's these stupid humans that fall into the Decepticons. No, you're a freaking Cobra Commander. That's why they went to Decepticons. Yeah. He's like, evil
humans,
is good. Let's kill
the humans. The humans were really awful in this movie. And I always say that the humans are the most useless part of every Transformers movie, because they are. They're terrible. I understand why they need to be there, because there needs to be a connection for the audience. But I always hate them because almost everything they say is pointless. Almost everything they say has no impact on anything. Because it's all going to boil down to what Transformers do no matter what. So it's like, it doesn't matter.
Optimus Prime is going to have to kill somebody.
Right. It's going to boil down to Prime no matter what. It doesn't. You can tell me all the history you want from the human guys. I don't care. I'm not paying attention to it. But it doesn't have any impact. But they were really terrible in this movie. I mean, they were as useless as they've ever been. I told you, I was actually, you know, begging for the days of Shia LaBeouf's parents in those first three movies, and they were awful.
Yeah.
I hated their comic relief every time they showed up. But I was like, man, I wish they would show up just to make this movie funny or something.
Yeah, at least it's like, hey, you're fake spark plug. They don't want to call you spark plug, but I know you spark plug because they want to call him Sam, but I know it's Spike. At least I understand what this is supposed to be. But I don't know what Cade Yeager is supposed to be. I'm like, he didn't even care anymore. Like, you can see it. I know Marky Mark really cared.
Yeah.
And yeah. What was that terrible movie about the killer pollen that M. Night Shyamalan made? It was that Marky Mark.
Was that the invasion? The invasion, right?
No, it wasn't. It didn't have a cool name. It had something stupid.
It was D something.
It was killer pollen.
D starting with an I.
Yeah. Yeah, I forgot, but it was bad.
It was real bad.
But he didn't care. You can see the Daddy's Home sequel trailer, and you see, you know, Marky Mark enjoying himself. Like, he's caring. I'm watching this movie, he's like, he doesn't care.
It's funny to hear that Mark Wahlberg really cares about Daddy's Home 2, which looks terrible also, but at least it looks like he's having fun.
He's like, yo, me and Will are going to have some fun here. Like, we're going to get it popping. Right. Like, even that
Joey's
stupid DirecTV commercial,
with,
when he's talking to Lego Batman, he cares more.
Right.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. Like, he cares. I can tell the difference. He doesn't care in this. Like, he's out of it. Anthony Hopkins is in there. Probably, it's like, I don't know why the little Transformer was a sociopath and why he wanted to kill people all the time, but
I don't understand
his servant character.
I don't understand.
If you go to the website, they say he's a headmaster. I'm like, a headmaster of what? Because he didn't turn into a head.
Maybe they meant headmaster of a school. Maybe they meant like a literal headmaster, like a headmaster of a school.
No, they say that he's supposed to connect to a car that they only showed as a car. He was driving the car, so it was like, you're not a headmaster. Like, that's not how it works.
Yeah, that was not in the movie. So, all right. Whatever.
It's going to help them sell some toys, but like, that's not in the movie at all.
They'll sell toys, and he might come back for the next movie or something. To sell more toys.
I hope not.
That's what these movies are about, really, is selling toys. It's about merchandise more than anything else. Even if this one underperforms box office wise, it'll more than make up for it in how much it sells in terms of merchandise and promo stuff. So that's all that really matters to Paramount. And these movies aren't going away no matter what. So. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, they'll sell some cars.
Yeah, they'll sell some cars.
It was bad.
They will sell some cars.
It was so bad. I was so mad.
All right, man. I think we
screamed at the movie.
I know, man. I was there next to you. I know. We were both very upset at this movie. We were both visibly shaken by how bad this movie was. But anyway, I think we've been kicking this movie around for about 20 minutes there. I guess that's enough. All right. Julian, I appreciate you coming on here, man, to talk Transformers with me. We got to talk War for the Planet of the Apes in a couple weeks at least.
I'll be ready for that. I'm still thinking about that movie. That's a good move.
Yeah, me too. I'm thinking about the Bad Ape. So, yeah, talk about that.
Man, Patagonia back.
All right, man. I will talk to you later on, man. We'll talk about this some more.
All right, man. See you later. Thanks for having me on.
Later.
Peace.
All right, no problem, man. Thanks for coming on. All right. That was Julian Lantel, fellow Punch Drunk Critic. We'll take a quick break. And God, we took up a lot of time there. We're almost 30 minutes into the show. I don't have that much time. So we're going to take a quick break. And of course, this show is dedicated to Prodigy of Mobb Deep, who passed away. So all the bumper music will be Mobb Deep, of course. So check out Shook Ones, which is the song that everybody knows Mobb Deep from. At least I hope most people know who Mobb Deep is. All right, we'll be right back.
To all the killers and the $100 billers.
Yo, I got
the phone. Your eyes are red, because you ain't got no feelings. Feelings.
I got this. Just watch my back. I got your front.
Check it out now. I got you stuck off the realness. We be the infamous, you heard of us. Official Queensbridge murderers. Tomorrow comes equipped for warfare. Beware of my crime family who got enough shots to share for all those who wanna profile and pose. Rock you in your face, stab your brain with your nose bone. You all alone in these streets, cousin. Every man for himself in his land, we be gunning. And keep them shook crews running like they supposed to. They come around, but they never come close to. I can see it inside your face, you're in the wrong place. Cowards like you just get their whole body laced up with bullet holes and such. Speak the wrong words, man, and you will get touched. You can put your whole army against my semen. I guarantee you it'll be your very last time breathing. Your simple words just don't move me. You're minor, we major. You're all up in the game and don't deserve to be a player. Don't make me have to.
All right, and I'm back. I gotta jump right into what's next because it just don't have that much time left. Let's see. Let's get into what's coming out on Blu-ray. This will be on Tuesday, June 27th. Power Rangers comes out on Tuesday. I didn't hate this movie the way a lot of other people did. This is, of course, based on the 1980s, 90s, 2000s series. Been around forever. It was made popular in Japan before it came out over here and played on Fox every day. I remember it used to come on when I was in school. It would be on like around 4, 4:30. And I was never able to really get into Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. I just never did. But the movie, I thought was pretty slick in the way they built up the characters so well before giving us what was essentially like an extended episode of the show. The movie didn't do all that great, though, so I'm not so sure we're going to get a sequel. There hasn't been any news on a sequel. And you, by now, you've heard something. So, I don't know. There might be the end of the Power Rangers already, which I think would be kind of disappointing. I think it deserves at least one more to see if it can build an audience. T2 Trainspotting, the sequel to Danny Boyle's classic Trainspotting film. This one brings back the entire cast. Ewan McGregor, who else was in this thing? Robert Carlyle, all those guys. I can't remember all their names at this point. Ewan Bremner, who was just in Wonder Woman. And then Johnny Lee Miller. Hey, I got all four. There you go. I was never a big fan of Trainspotting. It's just one of those movies that didn't connect with me. I didn't relate to it. I didn't relate to the music. I didn't relate to the drugs. I didn't relate to any of it, really. But T2 works for me. I love this film. And maybe it's because they're older and they're, you know, trying to cope with their past. But there's something that's more easily relatable to me. And I really enjoyed it. So if you like Trainspotting, I think you'll dig Trainspotting 2. It's not the same movie. If you're going into it expecting it to be the same, then I think you're kind of missing the point. This 20 years that has passed, it shouldn't be the same movie. So go check out Trainspotting 2 and figure out if it's for you, too. Chips comes out. This is one of those movies that I refer to that when I say how a TV-to-movie adaptation can go insanely wrong, Chips is the measuring stick for that. Like, Baywatch was a good way to do it. Chips is the crappy way to do it. And I don't think anybody would see Chips anyway. I don't know how it'll do on Blu-ray and DVD. Probably not well. Hopefully it just goes into the dustbin of history and we don't hear about it anymore. The Autopsy of Jane Doe, a horror movie that I heard a lot about but I never had a chance to see, so I can't really comment. And The Belko Experiment. This is the film written by Guardians of the Galaxy's James Gunn and directed by Wolf Creek's Greg McLean. This one had an awesome setup and not nearly enough of a payoff. It was about an office building full of employees who are locked in and they are forced to kill one another until only one remains. It's kind of like Battle Royal in an office building. It's a great setup. Fantastic cast as well. Of course, you know, if James Gunn is in it, then Michael Rooker from Guardians of the Galaxy is there too. All of his old favorites, except for Nathan Fillion, as he isn't there, unfortunately. But great cast all around. But it wasn't grisly enough. That's what I expect from Greg McLean. I expect it to be grisly, and I expect James Gunn to make it funny. That should be a great pairing. It doesn't really happen. Neither one of them happens. It's not grisly, and it's not funny. It's not dark enough. It's just got nothing going on for it. There's nothing satirical about it. I just expected more from the Belko Experiment. So that one was a disappointment to me. But if you like James Gunn and Greg McLean, you might want to check it out just if you're a completist, I would say. All right, let's get to some of the news that happened this week. That was just too much. And it's so much that I can't focus on any one thing in particular. But we got to start with the biggest news of the week. The big news of the week was Phil Lord and Chris Miller getting fired from the Han Solo spinoff movie. This was insane when it came down a few days ago. And, of course, you know, it blew up the internet. It boils down to this. They call it creative differences, and that's the excuse you use every time something like this happens. And of course, it always goes deeper than that. In this case, it seems like a disconnect between Lord and Miller and Lucasfilm, specifically President Kathleen Kennedy and co-writer / Star Wars staple Lawrence Kasdan. Lord Miller wanted to make a Lord and Miller movie, and to them, that's self-referential comedy. It's a lot of improvisation. These are the guys who did 21 Jump Street, 22 Jump Street, the Lego Movie, Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. This is their style. That is not the Lucasfilm way. They want their by-the-book space opera. They want it to be a little bit funny. That's why they brought Lord and Miller in there in the first place, to make it a little funny. But in the end, they wanted a space opera that felt like other Star Wars movies. And that was not what they were getting. So after months and months of, arguing and building tensions, Lord Miller got fired. And as simple as that. It seems like it was mostly amicable, but, none of these things are completely amicable. And to me, it's really disappointing. So not long after that happened, we heard that Ron Howard was the front runner, and he was eventually hired to take over. Now, he's coming in with only a few weeks of shooting left, but then there are the reshoots. And I imagine the reshoots are going to be extensive because, Lord Miller got fired for a reason. So they're going to have the reshoots are going to be where Ron Howard tries to, fix what Lucasfilm didn't like. So they're probably going to be extensive. I'm not going to go too deep into it from that point beyond that, because I'm going to talk about it at the end in the final segment. But Ron Howard being hired, not my first choice. But anyway, moving on. Sony's Amy Pascal, who was always known for being a bit of a bloviator, she blew things up again earlier this week when she started talking about Marvel and Sony's deal, basically saying that their universes are connected. This would be the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the Sony universe that they're trying to create, the one that has a whole bunch of Spider-Man characters but no Spider-Man in it. Yeah, that one. So basically what she's saying is Spider-Man is part of it. And he's, really tied into the Venom movie, which is going to star Tom Hardy. If you watch the video when she says that, Kevin Feige, the guy who runs Marvel, was like, really? And he looked absolutely confused by her saying that. So who knows if it was really true. But there is some evidence that suggests that she might not have been totally pulling our legs. What came out later is that it does appear that Tom Holland's version of Spider-Man may appear in the Sony spinoffs. I guess that would include Venom, or at least that's what Amy Pascal continues to put out there. It also appears that the Venom movie's villain is going to be Carnage, which makes sense. Of course it's going to be Carnage. That is his nemesis, even more so than Spider-Man. If you don't know who Carnage is another alien symbiote, just like Venom, except he's bonded to a homicidal maniac named Cletus Cassidy, so he's even more dangerous. And it looks like Spider-Man Homecoming is going to have some interesting cameos in it. Gwyneth Paltrow is going to be back as Pepper Potts. She hasn't done a Marvel movie since Iron Man 3, so she's back. And Jennifer Connelly is back in the MCU, but she's not playing Betty Ross like she did in Hulk. So she's playing someone known as the Suit Lady or Karen or something like that, which I'm going to guess that is a cover, because you don't bring in Jennifer Connelly to just play some random character. So I'm very curious to see what that's really about. And I'm going to be seeing Spider-Man Homecoming next week. And I'm going to be paying attention to see what Connelly's role really is. Maybe she is Betty Ross and they just don't want to spill it. Now, if that's the case, she's actually taking over for Liv Tyler, who played her in The Incredible Hulk. Remember, there have been two Hulk movies already that are part of the MCU. The first one was directed by Ang Lee, and it was kind of a failure, so they kind of ignored it when they made the sequel, The Incredible Hulk. They swapped everything around. They got rid of Eric Bana, replaced him with Ed Norton. They got rid of Jennifer Connelly, replaced her with Liv Tyler. And then Ed Norton got replaced by Mark Ruffalo for the Avengers. So the Hulk has had a complicated history in the MCU, in the Marvel Universe. And this could make it more confusing if Connelly turns out to be Betty Ross, who is his wife. All right, let's see. What else is coming up? X-Men Dark Phoenix is going to feature an appearance by Dazzler. Dazzler is the X-Men who was born in the disco era. She's considered popular by some people. I wrote in my post on this, Dazzler is considered popular by people who don't read comics. It's like, oh, she's kind of quirky, so we assume she's popular. Not really. She was popular for a minute back when she was created because it was the disco era, but the disco era died soon after she was created. And Dazzler sort of drifted. There was nothing really for her to do. She eventually became part of the X-Men, but that was after the disco gimmick was gone. She was just more of a regular character with the same light, sound-based powers. So, in fact, she became a much better character from that point on. And she eventually became the baby mama to my favorite X-Men ever, Longshot. So I only hope that she's in this movie if it means Longshot would be in this movie. But I doubt they would bring Longshot in because that would just be too awesome for me, and they would never do that. Jennifer Lawrence, Michael Fassbender, James McAvoy, and Nicholas Hoult are all confirmed to come back for X-Men Dark Phoenix, which is crazy because they were all trying to get out like a year ago, and now they're all back. So, great. Jurassic World 2 has an official title. It is Fallen Kingdom. I don't know what that means, but it sounds a lot like Jurassic Park, The Lost World, so I guess it kind of fits with the franchise. I don't know what the Fallen Kingdom is, but that's why they give us those titles, so we can guess. Daniel Day-Lewis says he's retiring from acting. Daniel Day-Lewis is one of my favorite actors of all time. I love him in There Will Be Blood. I love him in My Left Foot. He's great. I really like him in The Ballad of Jack and Rose, which not a lot of people saw. I think it was directed by his wife, actually. Says he's retiring after he does Phantom Thread, which is the movie he's doing, the fashion world movie that he's doing with Paul Thomas Anderson, who you all know is my favorite director. Directed Boogie Nights. That comes out this Christmas, I believe. So I wouldn't expect to see Daniel Day-Lewis on the press tour for this because all he's going to get asked about is his retirement. They're not going to ask about the movie at all. They're just going to ask about his retirement. So he probably won't be doing press for this, which is sad too. I wish he'd waited on this announcement, but no, it's too late for that. I mentioned earlier that Wahlberg and Bay were leaving the Transformers franchise. Godzilla 2 will include Mothra, Ghidorah, and Rodan. Yay, we knew that already. I told you about that 3 years ago when the original Godzilla came out, and they made that announcement at Comic-Con that those three of Godzilla's most popular foes would be in the movie, and now it's confirmed, so yay. And there is a new XXX movie in the works. Why, you ask, if this one only made $44 million in America, it's because it made $260 million everywhere else. And that is the way things work nowadays. A movie can suck ass here and not make any money. And if it makes a few hundred million dollars everywhere else, then it's fine. That's why you're going to get The Mummy 2. Because The Mummy, which didn't do anything here, has made over $300 million everywhere else. So that's just the way it works. All right. And that is the news. That is the Blu-rays. That is everything. So let's take a quick break. Listen to some more Mobb Deep. And when I come back, we'll close out the show. But you know what's coming out next week. Give you a tip on one more movie coming out this weekend. And give you my final thoughts on Ron Howard joining the Han Solo movie. And then we're out of here. So we'll be right back.
What up, Black? Hold your head wherever you at. On the floor from the cops with wings on your back. That snitch, nigga. Gave police your location. We'll chop his body up at 6 degrees of separation. Killer, listen, shit ain't the same without you at home. Phony niggas walk around trying to be your clone. They really fear you. When you was at home, it was pale.
That's why they wanna see you either dead or in jail. By the time you hear this rhyme, you probably be locked up. Tried to hide somewhere along the lines of plans slipped out. Got caught up in a crime that you can't take back. Reminiscing how I used to pick you up in the act. Years ago when we was younger, seems the hood took us under very deep. Wondering who snitching got me losing lots of sleep at night. You know my mouth is tight. I never sang to the cops, cause that shit ain't right. Sometimes I stroll past the scene of the crime and backtrack. Damn, why the situation go down like that? It'll be a long time before the heat dies down, and a couple of years before we see you around. But till then, maintain and keep your story the same. The cops is grabbing wrong niggas looking for someone to blame. They harassing, struggling to find the truth. There's a chance the case will get thrown out, cause they ain't got no proof.
All right, and that was Mobb Deep's Temperatures Rising, my favorite Mobb Deep song ever. And I said on Facebook not too long ago that I will never forget the first time I heard Shook Ones. I'll never forget the first time I heard Temperatures Rising. Amazing, amazing songs. Two of the best hip-hop songs ever made by one of hip-hop's best during the golden era. All right, let's begin to wrap up the show here. A couple more movies coming out this weekend. One I'm not going to talk about because I'm probably going to talk about it next week, and that is The Big Sick. Which I saw at Sundance. This is the film starring Kumail Nanjiani, Zoe Kazan, Ray Romano, and Holly Hunter. It's based on the relationship between Kumail and his wife, Emily V. Gordon. They both co-wrote the film together. And I had a chance to actually interview them, and I'll put up that interview next week. I won't do it this week. I'll put it up next week when the movie opens in D.C. So I'll talk about it more then. Another movie coming out is Maudie, starring Sally Hawkins and Ethan Hawke. This is the film where Hawkins plays Canadian folk artist Maude Lewis. It's kind of a somber, quiet movie. I kind of became obsessed with Maude Lewis a little bit when I was researching this film because I had never heard of Maude Lewis at all. And she's this woman who's born with juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, so she's kind of hunched over. She looks a little bit deformed when you look at her in reality. You know, she looks kind of bent out of shape. And she lives in this little tiny house that's like 10 foot by 10 foot, one room, with her husband, Everett. His name's Everett, who's played by Ethan Hawke in the film. And he's this angry, sort of womanizing guy. He has no respect for her. At one point in the movie, he tells her that she comes in behind the chickens and the dog. And he has no problem abusing her either. So it's one of those movies it's kind of hard to forgive him. And the movie kind of wants you to forgive him for who he turns out to be. But it's kind of tough because he's such a terrible person. But it also doesn't go that deep into their relationship. And it goes even less deep into her paintings. At some point in their marriage, she begins taking a painting. She paints little simple images of birds and animals, things like that. And the childlike nature of it is what attracts people. I mean, she had some art commissioned by Richard Nixon at one point. So she was sort of a big thing in her little tiny village in Nova Scotia. And, you know, but the movie doesn't go deep enough into that part of her life. It spends far more time dealing with how awful the relationship with whatever it is. And I think that was the wrong way to go. The interesting thing about her is how the art made her life better because she didn't have much else. She had literally nothing else. She had no family that cared for her. She had nothing. She had this husband who was a jerk, but her art is what gave her life. And the movie should have focused more on that. So I was a little bit disappointed by that. However, the performance by Sally Hawkins is incredible. Sally Hawkins is an amazing actress anyway. Ethan Hawke is miscast, I think. But Hawkins is fantastic. I did an interview with the director, Aisling Walsh, which I will put up tomorrow. You'll be able to listen to that tomorrow. So check that out. I don't know how many theaters Maudie's playing in. I imagine it's not many. But if you're a fan of Sally Hawkins, you're a fan of artist stories, you might want to go and check out Maudie. And it's certainly counter-programming to Transformers The Last Night. You're not going to get much more opposed than this. All right, before I get out of here, running out of time. Wow. Let's see. Ron Howard directing the Han Solo movie. You probably picked up on it that I don't really care for that decision. Not that it's up to me and not that anybody cares what I think about it. But Ron Howard, and look, Ron Howard would make sense for Lucasfilm for all the reasons that I don't want him as director. He doesn't have much of a directorial fingerprint, which is something that I hate about certain directors. Like, when I talk about Baby Driver next week, I can tell you that was an Edgar Wright movie through and through. Like, I knew it was an Edgar Wright movie. And if you didn't tell me it was an Edgar Wright movie, I wouldn't know it. I can spot a Martin Scorsese film a mile away. To certain directors, you can tell. Tell a Quentin Tarantino movie. You don't need to be told. Ron Howard is the kind of director who could make any kind of movie and you would not be able to know it was him. He just doesn't make that much of an impression. And that's what Lucasfilm probably liked about him, is that he could come in, you know, make the space opera that they want that doesn't go outside of it, out of their box, and then that's it. And look, that's great. They need to keep the trains running. I understand. They need this movie to hit a schedule, and you want to get a director who's not going to cause a fuss. Ron Howard's not going to cause a fuss. There's never been creative differences used as an excuse to get rid of Ron Howard for a movie. I don't think that's ever happened. Because he just doesn't fight like that. And he's not going to fight on Star Wars. Now, his comments, you know, about the job are exactly what you want to hear. You know, he's a huge fan, and we all know that he is. He's been tied to Lucasfilm and George Lucas for a long time. Remember, Ron Howard starred in American Graffiti, George Lucas's first movie. They starred together, and that was the time when George Lucas was cooking up the idea for Star Wars. So Ron Howard's been there since the beginning. He's not wrong when he says that. And of course, he directed Willow back in the 1980s for Lucasfilm. So he knows what they want. He knows what they like. He knows how to do it. That's great. But he's not going to impress as a director. It's just the way he never has before. He hasn't. And you look at his last couple of movies, they've been less than impressive by Ron Howard standards. The last Da Vinci Code movie. Did anybody even go see that? It just kind of came and went. I don't even remember sitting through it. And I know I was there. I don't remember. The last really impressive movie he made was Rush. And again, I feel like anybody could have made that movie. It's a good film, but anybody could have done it. So, Lord and Miller, they wanted to make a movie that was funny. They wanted to make a movie that had improvisation. They have a cast for improvisation. You got Donald Glover in there. You got Phoebe Waller-Bridge in there. You got Woody Harrelson there. These are people who know how to go off the cuff. They don't need to stick to the script, and that's not what Lucasfilm wants. So, Lord and Miller were going to make a Lord and Miller movie. Lucasfilm wanted them to make a Star Wars movie. I think there's a middle ground they could have found, but apparently they didn't. And now we've got Ron Howard as director, and to me that's disappointing. So, we'll see where this movie goes. I'm sure it'll be fine. It'll probably be good, but it may have been special, and it's not going to be now, at least I don't think so. Anyway, that's it. That's time to wrap up the show. I'm Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics. Where's my closing music? There it is. This has been fun, as always. I want to thank Julian Lytle for coming on to crap on Transformers with me for about 20-25 minutes. That was fun. Next week's show, we got so much to talk about, man. I don't know how I'm going to do it. The Big Sick, The Beguiled by Sofia Coppola, Baby Driver. It's a whole lot to take in. I don't know what I'm going to do. I had to bring in more than one person next week, you might guess. Talk about all of it. But we've got a lot to do next week. So I will see you then. Thanks for tuning in to Cinema Royale. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.